Good morning. This is Civitas On Air. I'm Agnieszka Nica, assistant professor in Collegium Civitas. It's our first podcast in English, so I'm both excited and a bit stressed about hosting that. Our today's guest is Dr. Kerry Roncos, the head of the Institute of Political Science and International Relations in Collegium Civitas. Kerry won numerous research grants to investigate Eastern partnership-related issues. Also, she does consulting work for the EU on the related topics. Her recent National Science Center grant focused on Moldova, the state that Russia's invasion of Ukraine put into the unfortunate spotlight. Today, we'll talk about the prospects of Ukraine, Georgia, and Moldova to join the EU. Hello, Kerry.
Good morning. Dzień dobry.
So, your Polish is getting better and better. So, let's begin with the first question in English. How is Russia war in Ukraine, which effectively began with Crimea and Donbas, shaping the region's relations with the EU? How may these develop further, do you think?
It's a really good question, and it's exactly what's on everyone's lips and in everyone's minds right now. It's made a huge impact, and it will continue to make a huge impact. First and foremost, you know, it's demonstrated that there's a lot of solidarity in Western Europe, in every Western capital, not only just towards Ukraine, but towards Moldova, small little country in the region, and Georgia as well. The most perhaps significant thing that it's done is shown that these countries belong to the common European home, that they have European identities, and that people in the West and also in the region would like to see these countries' futures firmly embedded in the European Union. And of course, all of that relates to the idea of EU further eastern enlargement. And that's where we're at right now. And really, that's been the most significant, substantial and amazing result of the Russian-launched war on Ukraine, I would say.
There was a lot of frantic activity and diplomacy going back on in March and April concerning the prospect of Ukraine, Moldova and Georgia being given a chance to join the EU. What exactly happened?
Yeah, it was a period of really intensive diplomacy. What it essentially happened was that there was a real groundswell of interest from the side of the European Union to start the idea of potentially these countries joining the European Union. But more importantly, there was a desire on the Ukrainian side to begin with about starting that actual process and putting it into motion, the idea of gaining candidate status is what we call it. So basically, the Ukrainian president literally sent a letter, a note to Brussels to present Ukraine's objective, really, or application for membership. And this, you know, wouldn't have happened a few months ago. This was a direct result of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. And that provoked a rather kind of immediate response on the side of the European Union, which was warm, which wasn't a rebuttal. It wasn't a kind of yes, maybe in the future, but it was a really immediate response that yes, let's try and get this done. And shortly after that, Brussels sent a questionnaire, it's known as, to Kiev with a kind of basic enlargement membership type questions that Kiev had to answer. And very quickly after that, both Georgia and Moldova jumped onto this dynamic, sent in their letters declaring their intention to want to join. And again, Brussels responded, here's the questionnaire, fill it in, let's see if you're fit and ready to become members. And that's kind of more or less where we're at now. But the answers are slowly coming in. So the potential for these countries becoming actual candidates for members has come around very quickly in a really short, you know, 2-3 month period of time. And that would be, if I can continue, a real seismic, substantial shift from the situation a few months ago when these three countries were part of the so-called Eastern Partnership, where membership was not on the cards. You know, the EU was keeping them at arm's length. We like you, we'll trade with you, but membership was really avoided as a kind of embarrassing topic. So a lot has happened in the last couple of months. That's where we are now.
Why should these three states become members?
It's less of a question now as to whether they qualify for membership. Like I mentioned before, the war has really brought into focus the idea that societies, people and communities in existing member states do regard these countries as European and part of our family. You know, they've been, in a way, members in training for the last 20 years. They have been ever becoming ever closer to the European or the EU's orbit. Like I mentioned, they've been trading more, they're part of Erasmus schemes, they have visa-free regimes with the EU. So they've travelled a long way since they became independent states from the Soviet Union back in 1991. And so they're kind of locked into the EU's world of trade and economic integration in so many different ways. And many would argue that they're kind of, you know, on the springboard of becoming candidates anyhow. The war brings this into much more immediate urgency, I would say.
What are the barriers and problems here, or if you prefer, pros and cons?
They're substantial, and it's important that we think about them. The pros, the biggest pro, I would say, relates to the solidarity, the indicator of solidarity that we have, we should have and we do have towards these three countries, to recognise the great efforts that people have made in these countries to really align with the European Union in lots of different ways. So that's a really important thing, the kind of normative idea, joining the European family. The difficulties will always relate to whether these countries, all of them, Ukraine, Georgia and Moldova, really have the capacity to become what we could call truly democratic countries, with political pluralism, with party systems that work, with independent judiciaries, with with less corruption, getting rid of state capture, because these problems are, always were, and do remain problems in the country. So if they're going to become members, they've got to improve on those governance and democracy related subjects, and the EU is going to have to help them with that. And that's going to be tricky in the case of Ukraine, of course, because there's a war going on.
Apparently there are a lot of challenges. So how do you think, what we can expect of over the next year?
Well, my answer to that would have been quite different a couple of months ago, because we assumed that the process of them becoming candidates would take, you know, half a year or even a year. But things are speeding up so quickly, not least because, you know, the war is continuing in Ukraine. So, as I mentioned before, all three countries have started to return that membership questionnaire to Brussels already. And I'm pretty sure that there's going to be big efforts on the side of the European Union to read through, to verify and to scan the results of those questionnaires, to come to an informed opinion very quickly on the side of the EU about whether these three countries are really ready to be given official candidate status. And I think we can expect a response to that from the EU side already in June. And if they decide to give official candidate status already next month, in fact, I think we can see the accession process, the kind of nitty-gritty, the nuts and bolts of bringing them in to the EU, to start really quickly after that. And I wouldn't be surprised that within 18 months, these countries are on the edge of becoming actual members, but they've got to work hard at democracy. And it also might shift the Western Balkans candidate countries like Albania, North Macedonia, Bosnia, who are also candidate status. It might just shift them out of the way, and our countries, these Eastern countries, move into the EU even quicker than them.
Can you go more into details about pros and cons?
The pros and cons, the lists on both sides are huge, and of course we can talk for a long time about them, but there are particular remarks to make in that regard. There are, of course, lots of problems, challenges, but also opportunities which relate to all three countries, so to Ukraine, Georgia and Moldova. You know, the rule of law, lack of democracy, lack of political pluralism, corruption, weak public administrations. You know, they're problems which have been in place for 20 years, and they're problems which all three countries continue to deal with. And I don't see any immediate remedies or chances to really overcome those. But there are then, at the same time, particular problems associated with the three different countries. Moldova is particularly suffering with really deep corruption. We call it state capture, where business people effectively influence and shape politics and the use of public funds. Moldova has a what we'd call a kind of buoyant and very active civil society as well, but at the same time they're underfinanced and they find it really hard to contribute to the political process. And of course Moldova is also a fractured state because you have this slither of land called Transnistria, which is a kind of self-proclaimed country. And it's kind of supported in lots of different ways by Russia. And this is really going to affect the chances of Moldova to move closer and to become an EU candidate state. So there are particular issues there in Moldova. And when it comes to Georgia, I mean, Georgia quite a while ago was seen as the shining example of post-Soviet success and transformation. But, you know, it hasn't really sustained. And although corruption is largely under control, not least because of the EU and support from the United States as well, they still suffer with a lack of regulation, for example, to do with inclusion of vulnerable groups. Georgia recently, there are plenty of examples where government authorities and police were clamping down on demonstrations, on legal demonstrations and freedom of expression and freedom of speech. And so Georgia is really suffering in this area right now. And problems in that area are going to affect their capacity to really move closer to the European Union. It's very obvious that when it comes to Ukraine, the main barrier is obviously at the moment to do with the war. It's a country in conflict due to Russia's unprovoked intervention. But even before that, obviously the takeover of Crimea, Russia's takeover of eastern parts of Ukraine has again fractured the country. And this makes it problematic, even aside from the war, for a country with insecure borders to become a member of the European Union. So just to kind of recap, there are common problems to all, but specific difficult problems as well. At the same time as those problems and challenges, there's a lot of political will on the side of the European Union and within these three countries to bring about the kind of reforms that are needed to become a candidate state. And these are the things that I think we have to focus upon and build upon and engage with colleagues in the region to really improve the chances of these three countries becoming members of the EU sooner rather than later. It'll make them stronger, it'll make them more, to use a common phrase right now, resilient. And I think we owe it to these countries to bring them closer to the EU sooner rather than later.
What does it all mean for Poland?
Well, we're sitting here in Poland, so let's think about that. It's really interesting, I think, for Poland, and I see a number of things to comment about. You know, there are lessons learnt from Poland's own membership process back in the 2000s. Poland, as we know, joined the European Union in 2004, and it was really always the most important country to join at that point. It was bigger than the other countries like the Czech Republic or Hungary, who were also joining. So Poland always mattered. And significantly, as soon as it became a member in 2004, Poland very rapidly became an advocate, a supporter of Ukraine moving closer to the European Union. And that was even before Russia's antagonism and attacks upon Ukraine's sovereignty. And this has always really continued because after 2009 or so, when the Eastern Partnership was created, which is the EU's framework for its relations with Georgia, Ukraine, Moldova, but also, once upon a time, with Belarus and Azerbaijan and Armenia, Poland has always been a driving force between the idea of widening the European Union and bringing these countries, but especially Ukraine, in as closely as possible. And of course, with the war, Poland has been one of the most active in its diplomacy and supporting Ukraine's integrity, which is, I think, something to be really to note and to be really proud of. And of course, we've seen Poles on the ground helping Ukrainian refugees with real effort and empathy and all these things are very, very important. But when it comes to EU politics, what we have seen and what we're going to continue seeing more and more of is Poland being an advocate of Ukraine, but also Georgia and Moldova's membership within the EU. And I see that Poland is on the side of those EU states who recognises that, yes, these countries have to be better democratically. They have to be robust economically. They have to, you know, have independent judiciaries and overcome those problems. But we owe it to them now more than ever to become members of the EU. And I think we can expect Poland's voice to be ever louder and ever stronger in this area. So I think that's very important to note. And Poland matters, you know, matters at the EU table. It's a large country, and since the UK left as well, Poland, I think, in these Eastern questions is important. And it's a big investor, I would say.
It seems that a lot is going on in the area of your expertise. So what are you going to work on next?
There is a lot to do, absolutely. And I'm always, I always try to do academic research, which is also policy relevant. And what's fascinating for me right now, and what I've been doing with colleagues in these countries and colleagues here in Europe, in Western Europe, academics, but also policy practitioners and civil society activists as well, is to really monitor and try to understand this process from being in the Eastern Partnership as an associate state, when you're close to the EU but you have no chance of joining, into being what we call a candidate state with the real prospect of becoming an actual member state. So I'm interested in that transformation, in the kind of issues we spoke about today, if and how democracy can be embedded in these countries to make them look like candidates. So I think it's important that we track those particular trends and processes. And I think it's important, and I'm trying to do this too, is not just observe these things in a pure academic and, you know, abstracted manner, but to somehow feed into the debates and influence the debates. Because, you know, I personally believe that EU membership is not perhaps the solution to problems in the East, and it's not going to stop the war. But I think it's an important gesture from the side of the West that they support the integrity of these countries, that they support the reform efforts in these countries. And it's an important part of the EU's ongoing story.
So you said a lot about Europe. But what about China? Probably you have some intuition here because we are both engaged in the research ground about China. So please tell us what China may think about these three countries becoming members of the EU.
I think it is a really important question too. And we shouldn't forget that as well as Russia, as well as the European Union, as well as the United States, China is also a stakeholder in this region. We know that through the Belt Road Initiative, that China has these tentacles through the region, in fact, across the world, mainly through infrastructure, building trade relations, but also in its own variant of soft power. And Georgia and Ukraine in particular are part of this extension of Chinese influence as it extends across the globe. Moldova too, but not to such a large extent. And of course, China also has a very different view about the world order. It has its own view of international norms, and it has its own variant as to how it sees in the spread of its own norms, let's say. My strong sense is that China would not have a problem as such with these three countries becoming part of the European Union. In fact, I think it could serve China's interest. China already has bilateral trade relations with these countries, and it's particularly effective and consequential actually with Georgia. And this means that if these three countries are inside the European Union and therefore full members of the EU single market, that could actually be to China's advantage because it gains another entry point into the EU single market. And for a big global economic player like China, that's definitely in their interests. But we need to keep an eye on that. You know, China's position here is also complicated because you know, they've shown a lack of regard or a lack of interest or willingness in actually critiquing Russia's invasion of Ukraine. But this might change. Let's see how that goes on.
Thank you for this conversation and clarifying the prospect of Ukraine, Georgia and Moldova to join the EU. Our today guest was Carrie Longhurst. Thank you for listening to us. You can find us on Spotify, Google Podcast and Apple Podcast. Until next time, goodbye.
Goodbye.